Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is just one segment of today's show. You can hear all of our conversations about New York's vibrant cultural scene on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and live online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. In the classical music world, executives normally take a behind-the-scenes role, but this season, one figure has stepped out from behind the curtain in a real high-profile way. Peter Gelb is the incoming general manager at the Metropolitan Opera, the biggest and some would argue most influential opera house in the world. Today, we've invited Peter Gelb to join us and to talk with us and with you. We'll be taking your calls. If you're an opera lover, what do you want to see happening at the Met in the upcoming seasons? And if you're only a casual fan, or if you've never been to the Met, what would it take to get you into the big house, as it's known? Our phone number is 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. Our email address is soundcheck@wnyc.org. We'll be taking calls and emails in just a few minutes, but first, Peter Gelb, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much.
I have to start by asking a pretty obvious question. You had a big job at Sony Classical, president of Sony Classical since 95. Why take the job at the Met? Why move to that to the big house, as they call it?
You make it sound like a prison.
This is apparently what the blogosphere has termed the Metropolitan.
I never heard it referred to that. But at the time that I was offered this opportunity, I guess it was almost a year and a half ago, I couldn't resist it because this position, running the Met, as you said in your introduction, it's the largest opera house in the world. It's maybe the largest performing arts institution in the world, for that matter. It combines everything that has thrilled me since I was a kid. Music, the greatest opera orchestra in the world, the greatest singers in the world. It's got scenery, great visual artists. It combines all the elements of the performing arts and music and theater in one fantastic experience, and to say no to running that incredible operation would be impossible for me. So the comparison to what I was doing previously, running Sony Classical, a record label in a declining recording industry, to going to the Met, to me was a no-brainer.
All right. Well, now, we have amply documented on this program, and of course it's been documented elsewhere, the troubles of the classical recording industry. Did you feel you were leaving a sinking ship?
Well, there also are troubles in the world of opera, too. So some people have remarked to me that I perhaps have gone out of the frying pan into the fire. I felt that the classical recording industry is somewhat of a sinking ship in terms of its ability to continue to be a creative driving recorded art form. The possibilities in the world of opera, which is also not a sinking ship but a aging art form, are much more abundant, because it is possible through the regeneration of stage productions, as well as in the commissioning of new pieces, to keep this wonderful art form alive and well.
All right, now that the interesting point that you don't have to reinvent the wheel here. You don't have to create a whole new repertoire of new pieces. You can go back to the tried and true and do new productions of them. So what are your plans for the first couple of seasons? Is it leaning more towards recasting older operas in new productions?
Well, it's not so much recasting. I mean, what's wonderful and magical about the Met at its best is that on any given night, if you have the right combination of singers, repertoire, and theatrical production, there's the artistic possibilities are infinite. Mm. And what I'm concentrating on, first of all, the next couple of seasons are seasons that were planned before I was engaged.
Right.
The world of opera, because of the schedules of the top singing stars, is somewhat predetermined, and it's kind of it's very unusual, if not incredibly lucky to the point of miraculous, that I've been able to make a couple of changes in the coming season that are significant. The most significant ones are the introduction of a brand new production of Madame Butterfly, which will open the season on September 25th, which is the first new production to appear on an opening night of the Met in 20 years, and which is, I think, high time that has happened. And my plans for the future are to always have new productions opening the season.
Mm-hmm. And whose production is this Madame Butterfly?
This Madame Butterfly is the production of the great director Anthony Minghella, who is
film director.
He's a film director, but he is not simply a film director. He is a stage animal as well. He's a great playwright and a great lover of music and opera. And you know, I should say that being a film director does not necessarily by any means qualify one to be a director of an opera. What qualifies a director of an opera, a great director of an opera, is somebody who has great creativity and ideas, understands the stage of live theater, which is a completely different kind of language than film. There are some film directors who wouldn't have a clue how to direct live theater. What I was delighted with in Anthony agreeing to do this opera, which has already been staged in London, and I might add was just recently awarded the Olivier Prize as the best English opera theater production of the past season. It's the first opera that he has staged, but he has a rich theatrical background, and his approach to this opera, which is remarkable considering this opera has been produced hundreds if not thousands of times in different productions, is a very remarkably simple and, when you look at it, obvious one that has great theatrical value. His premise was to take this Japanese set opera and present it as if it was a Japanese play. He uses elements of Japanese theater like bunraku puppetry and kabuki. And it's a marvelous distillation of different Japanese theatrical styles that make such perfect sense when you see the production. I think it will be a theatrical and musical revelation for the Met audience. And in fact, we were fortunate enough to put together a cast for this that is the best possible singing cast. We have Cristina Gallardo-Domas, whose signature role is Butterfly. She's singing Butterfly, and the wonderful tenor Marcello Giordani as Pinkerton, and Dwayne Croft as Sharpless, and James Levine, who will have fully recovered from his surgery, will be back to conduct opening night. In fact, it will be the first Butterfly he's ever conducted at the Met.
Wow. Well, that is a surprise. But now, you know, you mentioned Levine, with all of these plans, I mean, even the best laid plans go awry. And here's, you know, a good example with James Levine out of commission now after shoulder surgery for several months. So, you know, you're hitting the ground running in one sense, but you've also, it's almost like you've got a third leg tied to you because you have to go out and hire a bunch of substitute conductors and directors?
Well, sadly, the Met has had to hire substitute conductors for this season. There's nothing lucky about it, but luckily for me, I don't have the headache of having to deal with it. It's, mm-hmm. it's Joe Volpe's responsibility,
of course,
because these are the final months of his final season. I'm just praying that Levine, that Jimmy, will have a great recovery. He's assured me he will, and he will be more fit than ever when he returns. He's one of the greatest asset of the Met. If you were to pinpoint one individual person, it would be James Levine. For almost 30 some odd, almost 40 years, it will be soon. He has conducted this orchestra. There's no conductor orchestra combination in modern history that comes close to that partnership, and the result is an orchestra that is widely regarded as the greatest opera orchestra in the world.
And which is regarded as a great orchestra period, as we often see when Levine takes them out of the pit and on stage. We're speaking with Peter Gelb, who is the general manager in waiting at the Metropolitan Opera. August 1st is when Joe Volpe steps down and you step in?
Officially? I'm the general manager as of August 1. I've been there for over a year now, though, making plans for the future.
Right. And we're making plans to take your calls and emails for Peter Gelb about the future of the Metropolitan Opera. Our number is 212-264-7483, 212-264-7483. And, Peter, no getting around it, you were a somewhat controversial choice when your name was announced as the man to succeed Joe Volpe, who has been, a fixture at the Met. So I'm assuming that we'll, probably hear from a number of people who are longtime Met aficionados, but I'd especially like to hear from some listeners who perhaps do not consider themselves operaphiles. We'd like to know, and I'm sure, Peter, you would like to know too, what would it take to get you into the house there at the Met? So give us a call, 212-264-7483, or email us soundcheck@wnyc.org. One caller already who didn't want to be on the air asked Peter if it would be possible to schedule more matinees to accommodate, changing lifestyles, people who have kids and stuff and can't stay out late on a weeknight.
Well, that's a very interesting question. Certainly, we are going to have more matinees in the immediate future, because one of the other innovations or new production ideas that we're instituting next season is a family entertainment opera offering, which is the abridged version of Julie Taymor's Magic Flute that we've had translated into English by J.D. McClatchy, the wonderful poet and librettist. And that offering, which will be 90 minutes long, will be presented in a series of 6 matinee performances during the holiday period. In general, we'd love to have more matinees during the course of the season, but we're somewhat limited by being a repertory house, because every minute of the day that stage and the Met is being used, Monday through Friday, unlike on Broadway where there are Wednesday matinees, Monday through Friday we have rehearsals going on in the Met every day. In fact, the scenery of the Met is constantly being changed, so that what is rehearsed in the daytime is then struck, and the evening's performance, which is a different opera typically, will be brought in. Right. So we don't have the luxury of having matinees during the week. Sunday matinees, of course, is something we would love to see at some point, but it's there's a long history of not having Sunday matinees, and there are all kinds of logistical and labor issues that go with that prevent us from planning that. The other point I would just like to make is that my attempt is to look at the Met from every possible angle, and for example, in terms of pleasing a modern audience, one of the challenges of operas is that they're very long, and I have absolutely no intention, with the exception of that Magic Flute, of cutting any operas, because that would be an artistically inhumane and terrible cretinous thing to do. But what we can do is shorten the presentations of operas through the intermissions. I think that most of the operas that were written in the 19th and early part of the 20th century were written with intermissions that accommodated the needs for ancient theatrical scene changes. And as we look at a more modern approach to presenting operas on the stage, it is also possible to have fewer intermissions.
Mm. And quicker set changes.
And thereby, for example, even existing productions, we're looking at the famous monumental Aida of the Met, which is an example of everything majestic and spectacular of in terms of Met scenery, which has been in the repertory for about 20 years now, and I have no intention of removing. We do plan to create new scenery in Act 3, so that the scene change which currently exists between Act 3 and Act 4 will be seamless, thereby streamlining 35 minutes of intermission time off the total evening's running time.
Okay. All right. Let's take some calls. We're speaking with Peter Gelb. He is the incoming general manager of the Metropolitan Opera. We'll start in Northport with Lara. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And every day I listen to your show as I'm on my way to pick up my children.
Oh, great.
And that
Thanks.
Was my comment today, was that I've grown up with opera. I've loved opera my entire life. I enjoyed it as a youngster, as a teenager. And I find now with two small children, a four-year-old and a seven-year-old, that I would like to see more programming that is offered to children, which, of course, he's already addressed. But I think it's very important in this age where we need instant gratification in so many other ways that children really need to be, this whole idea of opera needs to be weaved into their childhood in order to have an adult listener.
All right, Lara, thanks very much. It's a good point, and one that I'm sure some of our other callers will be following up on. Let's actually move straight away to Michelle, calling in from Stamford, Connecticut. Hi, Michelle, and welcome to the program.
Hi. I wanted to know if Mr. Gelb was thinking of doing anything with kids, getting them early. I grew up in Queens, pretty much poor family, and I listened to opera on the radio with my father. And I've been to the Met probably four or five times in my 60 years, but I think if it was made more available, I think there's kids out there that would like it. And I do think that, you know, as the older generations die off, I think it would be a good investment for the Met to expend some of their energies in interesting the younger folks that are growing up, and not particularly the wealthy younger folks, because they may be exposed to more cultural things.
All right, Michelle, a couple of good points in there. Peter, let me let's address the shorter, quicker one first, which is the cost of bringing kids or adults to the Met. What are you thinking in terms of ticket prices?
Well, it's absolutely true that the costs of going to the Met are extraordinarily high. However, one twist we have, which is unusual for any major opera house for next season, is that we've actually taken 90,000 of our seats during the course of the season and have reduced the price of them from $26 to $15. Those are certainly not by any means the best locations, but they certainly get you into the theater and give you a chance to experience this wonderful art form in person. The other things that we're doing include, we have a very ambitious plan to take our Saturday matinees and designate some of them next season as high-definition television productions that will be beamed directly into movie theaters across the country, as well as being made available via the Internet as a broadband programming service, which will enable these operas live to be transmitted live into your home.
Right. Now, there's also the question, here's a suggestion from Esther, who writes to us from Newark, New Jersey, suggesting that several performances each year should be reserved for non-subscription only, opening up the theater to people who normally would not be able to, to get those seats, the good seats in the house.
Well, the fact of the matter is that there are plenty of good seats available on a non-subscription basis. There are always seats if you order them far enough in advance that one can purchase. Subscribers take up about 40% of the seats.
Mm-hmm.
We're also looking at plans to open up more of our dress rehearsals to a broader section of the public. Just the other day we were discussing the idea for our opening weekend. The Met season opens on September 25th. We're thinking of perhaps having the final dress rehearsal of the season on Friday, the Friday preceding it, to be completely free, and distributing the tickets in a way that would enable people who have never been in the Metropolitan Opera House to go there for the first time. So we're looking at all of these ways, and my greatest desire is to break down the walls, the barriers between the opera house and the public.
Well, and it would seem that one of the great things you have at your disposal, and we have several emails about this, is the fact that opera is not just a musical medium, but a visual one as well. And you're trying to attract a generation of listeners who have grown up thinking of music as a visual medium, you know, a generation that grew up with MTV and then a later generation that grew up with music on the web, with video streaming and all this kind of stuff.
That's absolutely true. And that's why amongst the directors who we're going to be bringing to the Met are directors whose work is familiar to a younger audience, someone like Anthony Minghella, who's directing our Madame Butterfly, of course, also directed Cold Mountain and The English Patient. He understands the aesthetics of contemporary art. We have this wonderful French-Canadian director, Robert Lepage, who created the most recent Cirque du Soleil show, Ka, at Las Vegas, who's going to be directing our new Ring Cycle and using all kinds of the latest technology of projections and other kinds of special effects. The aesthetic sensibility and the theatrical excitement that is possible in the most wonderful Broadway shows or other entertainment venues will be brought to the Met without at any moment compromising the musical value, because I think the older listeners, the older subscribers to the Met are most concerned that any change that takes place does not in any way have a negative impact upon what they love the most, which is the great singing. And in fact, the good news is that by adding or by raising the theatrical bar, we are going to, in fact, have more of a concentration of the greatest singers in the world singing at the Met.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of the great singers want to be challenged by new productions and want the thrill of that. So some of the top stars, like the young Russian soprano Anna Netrebko or Renee Fleming or Rolando Villazon, the great new tenor, they have all made commitments to the Met going forward to sing two productions a year there, which is a greater commitment than at any other opera house in the world, directly as a result of offering them more new productions and opportunities.
We are speaking with Peter Gelb, who as of August 1st officially takes over at the Metropolitan Opera, although he's been there for about a year now, making plans. And now, talking with our Soundcheck listeners, Chris, joining us from New Jersey. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Hey, I was just wondering if you might do the new Roger Waters opera, Sa'ira.
Sa'ira, right. Peter, have you heard this? Roger Waters of Pink Floyd?
Actually, I've absolutely heard it. In fact, when I was working at Sony Classical, in my previous capacity as the president of that record label, I helped Roger Waters develop that piece. It's a very interesting work and one which definitely does deserve to be heard and someday will play in opera houses, I'm sure. There are so many operas, contemporary operas, that are crying out to be heard at the Met that the Met has not featured in previous seasons, that my intention is definitely to concentrate on presenting one new opera every year at the Met. We're going to start off, though, with some of the great great composers whose works have never been performed there. John Adams, for example, who's regarded as one of the greatest contemporary composers of our time. His work has never been performed at the Met, and in the 8-9 season, the first season I could schedule a new work, his new masterpiece, Dr. Atomic, is going to be performed.
Okay. Well, that's it. There's a lot to come in the future, but before we wrap up, Peter, I just wanted to take a step back into the past. I mean, you are about to take over officially at the Metropolitan Opera, a place where, as a teenager, you briefly worked as an usher. I mean, you have kind of a lifelong love affair with this place, don't you?
When I was 16, I worked in the standing room of the family circle, and I remember the first day I arrived on the job, one of my fellow ushers told me to immediately remove my identifying number, so in case I got in trouble, no one would be able to tell on me. I've always loved the Met, and over the years I have worked in various capacities. I produced the television programs there in the 80s. It's the most exciting, thrilling, theatrical, musical venue I could ever have dreamed of working in, and now my dream will come true.
You have an early memory, a favorite early memory of your days at the Met, maybe just as a kid or something?
Well, my very first memory at the Met was being taken to the new opera house 40 years ago, and I was about 12 or 13 years old, and I was seated in the box of the then general manager of the famous imperious Rudolf Bing, who ran the theater with an iron hand. Mm-hmm. And I was seated in his box because my father was then the city editor of the New York Times. And I remember very little of the performance. It was a Carmen, but I fell asleep as soon as I sat down. And I think I was tired from having played football that morning. And but I do remember at one point waking up because a member of the audience started yelling "Fooey" at the top of his lungs because he didn't like the performance of Grace Bunbury, the singer. And Bing, this is the most entertaining part of the whole experience for me as a 12-year-old, Bing leaped to his feet, ran to the adjacent box where the offending patron was shouting, and engaged him on the spot.
Well, here is, in fact, Grace Bunbury singing the role of Carmen in the background. We've been speaking with Peter Gelb, the incoming general manager of the Metropolitan Opera, and we've been speaking with some of our listeners on the phone and via email as well. Thanks to everyone who called in or wrote to us. And Peter Gelb, congratulations on the position. Good luck as of August 1st, sailing the ship off into the future. And thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, and I hope you and your listeners will join me at the Met next season.
The program continues in a moment with a very different sort of singing, the love songs of Britpop guitarist turned singer-songwriter Richard Hawley, and in a little while we take a look at how France is taking a bite out of Apple. This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to today's podcast of Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.